Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Heat Nation, welcome back into Believe in Miami Heat for a very, very special bonus episode. First time that we are doing a double episode week since Norris Cole has joined the show. I'm joined by Norris, the two-time champ, as always, and Norris, this show coming out on March 25th. A lot of Heat Nation stressing out about trade deadline, stressing out about losing streaks. Mm-hmm. But we're not stressed out on this show today, and we're going to give the people something a little bit different. What we're going to do, because March 25th is not just the trade deadline in this weird COVID year. March 25th is also another major day, a huge day in the history of the Miami Heat. March 25th, as you know, Norris, and the people will now remember, tomorrow, March 25th, is the 8-year anniversary of the 27th win in the historic win streak. March 25th, 2013, the Miami Heat beat the Orlando Magic 108-94 for their 27th win, which is, to this day, the second longest single season win streak in NBA history and the third longest combined win streak. The Warriors did it over two seasons. They had 28 wins over two seasons. So what we will do is we're going to forget about losing streaks. We're going to forget about the stress of the deadline, Norris. We're going to take a trip back for the people, and we're going to reminisce about one of the all-time great runs in regular season NBA history.
Absolutely. What's up, Heat Nation? This is a time, you know, trade deadline, a lot of stress. Lost three in a row. You know, a lot of people are down right now in Heat Nation, but today we're going to cheer them up because this represents the point in time where we won 27 straight games, bro. And along that ride, there's some very, very memorable moments in Heat Nation history that we're going to talk about. And so I'm excited. It's bringing back goosebumps, bringing back all the memories. And I'm blessed that I was a part of that team.
Yeah. And there's some of those moments, you know, the real ones, the hardcore Heat lifers that listen to this show, they're thinking back to this win streak and they're saying to themselves, let's just get right into it. Let's get into it. There's some very specific moments that we'll definitely get into, and you know it.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about that. We'll live in not just Heat history, pop culture history. That's a little bit of a tease. There's so much to get into. And before we do, let's talk real quickly about some of our favorite people in the world. That's the people over at Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. I talk about it weekly, and that's because it's the only online sports book that I use every week. We're smack dab in the middle of March Madness. Sweet 16 is only a couple days away. Florida State versus Michigan. You know, I got action on that. You know, I only filled out one bracket, and you know, I have Florida State winning it all. Might not be the best pick, but hey, I'm riding with my boys. You ride with whoever you think. You think Florida State has a chance? Go ahead and do it. But if you're going to ride with anybody, ride with them on Bet Online. They have you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sports book experts. I want to go a little bit in somewhat in chronological order of this thing, in terms of how it went down. But I guess my first question that I thought is just for you, you know, being 8 years ago now, the anniversary of the 27th win, you know, what comes to mind about that time, that streak, you know, a year after winning a championship, having a historic run like that? Like, what's the first thing that you think about when you think about that run?
Man, that run was fun. It was also tough. physically and mentally, it was very tough, but it was so much fun, bro. We enjoyed ourselves on and off the court. So many memorable moments. And I think about just pure dominance. That was a team full of alpha males. That was a team full of highly competitive people from Pat Riley all the way down to the training staff. You know, everyone was competitive. And we obviously, as the players, we were ultra competitive. And so, you know, those are the things that I think about on that run. I mean, we were the Heatles. And to this day, we are the Heatles.
Yeah, did you guys, when that was happening, you know, like you were in it. So did you think about it? Did you personally think about it? Did the team, like, did Spo ever say anything when you got to like 15 wins or 20 wins? Like, did you hear the media talking about it? Or was it just like, no, this, we got business to take care of?
Man, bro, our team was so organic. We never even talked about it. We never discussed it ever. We just lived in the moment. And that's one thing Spo used to always talk about. And that's one thing we used to always do and tell each other. Man, live in the moment and take it, as cliche as it sounds, we took it one game at a time, bro. We really took it one game, one day at a time and enjoyed it. We never discussed the streak until it was over. The only time we discussed it was after it was over. And we discussed it one time and then we moved on from it because ultimately our goal was to win a championship. Our goal wasn't to win 27 straight. The goal is to play in the regular season and prepare to get the final 16. The final 16 is the first game all the way to the last game of the playoffs.
Yeah, like – so I actually was going to ask you that towards the end, but I, since you mentioned it, what was that conversation like after the last game? Like, did you, what was there, was there like a recognition of like the magnitude of what you did or what was it like?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what we did was we took a moment in the locker room. Like we took a moment, literally, like we sat there in quiet. We took a moment to realize what we just did. We congratulated each other. And then, you know, after that, we was like, all right, it's over with. Now let's go win a championship. Because it wouldn't have mattered if we did all that and didn't win.
Right.
Every year that the big three came together, it was championship or bust, bro. It wasn't, nothing else mattered. It was championship or bust. So we took a moment. We embraced each other. We embraced the streak. We talked about, you know, congratulated each other. And then after that, once we left that locker room, after that game, after we lost, it was like, all right, let's go win the championship.
So I guess like, you know, the fact that you guys didn't talk about it and like didn't really look, I'm just going to be honest. It's hard for me to believe that you're human beings. You hear, you see what's going on, that you didn't think about it at all, but let's just, you know, but in terms of whether it's this win streak, right? Like winning 27 straight games or just that's winning a ton of games in general, talk about, you know, how much more difficult it is being the defending champs, being on a team with the big three that, you know, I guess you have a target on your back, like how hard it is to sustain the level of success you guys were able to sustain for such a long time that season coming off of such a successful year.
Man, it was very tough. I mean, when you're the defending champs, you automatically understand that whenever you go to a team's gym, a team's arena, that you're going to get their best shot. It's going to be sold out. Everyone's going to be at the game. You know, teams are going to have that adrenaline rush, that excitement to play you. But for us, it was about practicing our habits, developing our habits so that we can be ready to win the championship. And part of being able to win a championship is finding different ways to win, being able to win in stressful situations, being able to win on the road. And during those 27-game win streak, we were able to go through all of those situations that it was going to take to win the championship. And so even though we won those games were tough, bro. And those games helped propel us, you know, for NBA finals run.
But yeah, I mean, oh yeah, cool.
But it was organic, bro. When I say that it was truly organic, it really was, bro. We never talked about like, bro, we didn't win 20 in a row, bro. We won 15 in a row. We never discussed that in the locker room. We never did.
It's crazy to me that it just never even came, like it was never even a thought. Like it's just so hard to, I mean, I got to think having,
bro,
been like having worked
championship or bust, bro.
Right.
You got to understand how our team was literally championship or failure. It was nothing else, bro. And that's why it was so fun. That's why we was able to enjoy ourselves, because we knew the pressure that we were under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've talked about keeping it almost like the camaraderie of the team and keeping it, you know, almost like keeping it almost sounds like keeping it light in a year where there is so much pressure. And you talked about like team bonding and, you know, going to dinners and stuff like that. Was there a lot of stuff, like what was, I guess, without going into like whatever too much detail, like what was like the team bonding experience? Like, was it everyone? Was there groups? Was it, you know, these guys hung out with these, or was it just like anytime the team did something, everyone did it together?
It was everything. We had events where the whole team came together, where we would like watch the Super Bowl or stuff like that. You know, we had team get togethers to where you bring your wives and your families and stuff like that. Obviously on the road, we had a lot of things where it was just the guys, just the players, you know, the plane rides were epic. The conversation, the games, you know,
the gambling, bus rides, a lot of gambling,
a lot of card playing. I'm just going to say that a lot of card playing.
I've been on those. I've been not on your plane rides, but I've been on some of those plane rides. I've been taking a time or two. It's not smart to be a video guy gambling with Al Jefferson. Just put it that way.
Yeah, that's not smart. And you know, I was young, so I did not participate at all in any of that gambling. But you know, they had a lot of, you know, it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of jokes and music. Everybody had different personalities. You know, man, the conversations were epic. Shane Battier, he was every now and then he'd get up and go on a stand-up comedy rant. I mean, it was just so crazy, bro. It was just so fun. And everybody is like, our personalities all, because we were different, we all matched up well. And so
that's Shane Battier doing stand-up comedy is very fascinating to me.
It's not that he did stand-up comedy. It's just whenever he would get up and go on a rant, it was just like stand-up comedy, bro. So, he was so funny, bro.
What was it? Was his style like getting up and roasting people or getting up and just being funny?
No. What the saying we had with Shane Battier was, he's always for the people.
Okay.
He used to get up like he was like he was Barack Obama or something to be talking.
Okay.
and he would always talk about giving the people a social touch.
I don't even know that social touch.
He would always talk about, yes, we have to touch the people. We have to be for the people. And he would go on and on with it. Like he would get up like he's giving his speech, but it was like pure comedy, bro. And like, if you ask anybody that played for that team, whenever Shane Battier goes on one of his little rants, bro, it was just so epic, bro. We would be crying like in literal tears listening to Shane talk.
I got to think for you, that was your second year, right? Like you won your first two years were two championships, right? I got to think for you, even in the second, just even though you just came off a championship, just even in that second year during a run like this, just being around the bad, even Shane, but like you're around just all these all-time greats at what, 24 years old?
Yeah,
like
man.
Just for you, just to even just be a fly on the wall. I mean, you're obviously you're not a fly on the wall. You're a huge contributor to a championship team, but you're also just this young guy that's thrown in the mix with this knowledge base. That's just unreal.
Man, I took it all in, bro. Cause obviously I'm a highly competitive person. So I was there to do my job. You know, I'm not a male groupie or nothing like that. So, you know, I wasn't just happy to be there. You know, I had a job to do, but I definitely embraced having all of that knowledge around me. And, you know, I talked to everyone. I learned lessons from everyone. I mean, you just think every person on that team was all world, either in college. Shane Battier is one of the best college basketball players ever. Mm-hmm. You got LeBron, who's one of the best, who's arguably, you know, one of the best, or if not the best player ever. You got Dwayne Wade, who's one of the best shooting guards ever. You had Chris Bosh, who was one of the best, you know, power forwards ever. He's Olympian. Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, one of the best 3-point shooters ever. You got
Ray, at the time, Ray was probably the best 3-point shooter ever. Like, I don't think there was much of an argument, right?
Yeah, he was the best shooter ever. Then you got UD and Birdman, who were two of the best championship role players ever and two ultimate tough guys. I mean, you had Rio, who's the most confident individual to ever walk this earth. I mean,
That's great. Yeah.
We had a team. I mean, you had Mike Miller, who, you know, we called him Killer. You know, one of the best, you know, he had one of the best moments shooting the three ball with his shoe off.
James Jones, right?
You had James Jones. We called him Champ, the three-point champ, who's also one of the smartest, most intellectual business guys you will ever meet.
And man, might be executive of the year this year, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we had a roster full of guys, bro. And I was just happy to be a part of it and play my role. And like I said, we had fun together, bro.
Yeah. All right. So as far back on the streak though, so we talked about before we talk about, cause there was a streak within the streak that I don't want to talk about, but I also, you know, we talk about the difficulty of these games and winning 27 in a row and even just winning in general. There was kind of a theme in this streak, which was, you know, getting down early and coming back. And
that,
you know,
was
it
not
is
the plan, bro. That
obviously
was
that's not
in the plan.
Look, obviously it's not the plan, but you know, that is what it is. That, you know, was that just part of being in the, it wasn't even like this was the beginning of the, this was the middle of a year trying to get back to a championship. Was it just one of those things where, like, you know, teams are giving you their best shot, we're going to fall behind, but we always kind of had the confidence and we knew in our capability was we're going to come back. Like we know what we got to do, even if we fall behind, like, or even like the Cavs game where you guys were up 22 and then they came back and then D Wade went off, or I mean, there's a few games, but was that just sort of a mentality thing where it was like, no matter what happens, we're confident that we're going to get this done?
Well, we always knew that we play our best. Nobody could beat us. We always knew that, but it just teams, you know, sometimes we would start off slow in other games, teams would just, you know, come out and play well, but it was just part of the journey, bro. It was just part of the journey. And we always knew that on a championship run, there's always going to have to be games that you come back and steal. It's going to have to be games that you win when you're not playing your best. You're going to have to sustain runs. When teams going to run, you're going to have to be able to take their run and then go on another run yourself. And those games prepared us for that. And those being down, we never had panic on our team. We never panicked. Spo never panicked. Our players, we never panicked. And it's just that all of those games prepared us, bro, for what we were going to face in our finals run. And it made it that much more special. Like when you can be down and know that you can come back and know that you're going to come back, that just gives you a different type of confidence on the court, bro. And we had unlimited confidence in our abilities and in ourselves.
Yeah. And in one guy in
particular. The Cleveland game, bro, the most special Cleveland game was the game on the road in Cleveland.
Yeah, when we were down
like 22 points going into the fourth quarter or something like that. Then LeBron went crazy.
27 in the second half.
Yeah, we were down 27. Then
that was the 24th win. And there was a dude wearing a shirt that said LeBron come home. that was what got all the publicity.
Man, that game was, after that game, I was like, man, I don't know. We're gonna never lose again after that game. It was like, that was crazy.
Yeah, that is 27 point lead. That is insane. That is nuts. And yeah, and LeBron scored 10 straight in the fourth quarter to end up winning that game. But speaking of LeBron, like I said, there was a streak within the streak, which was LeBron had six consecutive games of 30 points, shooting 60% from the field, which was the first time of any player had ever done that. Five was the record before that. And obviously, and then, you know, over the 27 games, he shot like damn near 60% from the field, just a little bit under. And look, he was MVP that year. We already know the greatness, but was there something as the year progressed, as you got, you know, when the streak happened, like you talk about, that 24th game was when he had 10 points in the fourth quarter after being down 27. Was there more that was that just common? Was that just LeBron to you guys? Or as this year, as great as he already was in basically what was his ninth or 10th season, did you see more as this season went on where it's like, wow, there is a whole other level of greatness from this guy?
Well, we always knew that he was great. That was never in question. We always knew that. And we always appreciated that. We could never take him for granted, but we also saw his progression. He was constantly getting better, which is scary when he was already the best player in the world at the time. So we were just, you know, a part of his, his growth, a part of his progression to greatness. And to see it, you know, he would go games 11 for 12 from the field, bro. Like, that's so crazy. Like, I don't think people know how tough that is for a guy who handles the ball that much, a guy who's one of the best scorers of all time, to be going games 11 for 12, 12 for 13, 10 of 12 over a whole game. Guys wish they could shoot free throws that well, let alone shoot that well from the floor, bro. It was just, I believe in timing, and it was just like the perfect time where everything came together for our team and for him as an individual and his growth in his game. And we needed that. We needed the growth in his game in order to help us win those championships. And it always helps when you have a team full of competitors and you also have the best player in the world. It always helps.
Absolutely. And then
it always helps.
Yeah. And then I think the other notable LeBron thing, which was a team thing, but I think LeBron got the credit, you know, it's LeBron. So, you know, it gets picked up that it's a LeBron thing, was the pregame dunk contests, where it was just,
oh, yeah, bro.
You know, LeBron gets the attention from it, but it was everyone, right?
Yeah, it was everybody, man. I used to get my little left hand windmill dunks in, you know, Birdman come down the lane, everybody do their dunks. And then, you know, who going to close the show, you know, King James going to close the show, man. That's all that was. And, it was a thing. It became a thing. People would get to the games early. Everybody had a recordings out, watch it. The news station, ESPN, and all the major sports outlets would get there early to, you know, watch the show. And that was just part of, that was just one saga of the Heatles, bro. The pregame dunk contest.
Yeah, and it speaks to, you know, just sort of, even though there's this immense pressure on you guys, there's still lightness. We know the job, right? But we're not going to let it overwhelm us. Like we were there, we know what we have to do to get back, but we can still enjoy ourselves, enjoy each other, and have fun.
Exactly. We definitely want to make sure we enjoyed ourselves, because you got to understand, these are times that's going to last forever. These moments, we understood that, listen, we are doing something remarkable that could possibly go down in the history of the game. And so you don't want to do all that and not enjoy it. And we made sure that we enjoyed ourselves while we were doing it.
Yeah. And then obviously the fun continued, but before we get to the funnest, probably arguably the funnest part of this whole streak, maybe season, but definitely happening during this streak. You guys won 7 games before the break and 20 after the break, but the game right before the break was the NBA Finals rematch against OKC, KD versus LeBron. You guys end up winning, but KD goes for 40, LeBron goes for 39. Can you talk a little about, I mean, obviously you saw it in the finals, but then even that matchup, just like seeing it again the next year, what, just witnessing those two at their peaks going head to head, like what it's like seeing that kind of greatness, you know, up close.
And that was just high level basketball at its finest, bro. He had the best player in the game going up against the next best player, the guy who's trying to take over as the best player in the game. You know, KD had won the MVP, I think, the season before that. You know, LeBron had won 3 out of the last 4 MVPs up until that point. So it was, you know, LeBron's the best player in the world. KD was trying to stake his claim as the best player in the world. And, you know, those two were definitely unmatched when it came to who was the best two. They were definitely the top two players at the time. And to be able to see that, because growing up, you hear about Bird and Magic. And then I got to see, you know, MJ versus whoever was, you know, MJ.
A bunch of dudes that weren't as good as MJ.
MJ used to destroy everybody, you know. Then you had like Kobe against T-Mac and Allen Iverson and stuff like that. You had different rivals. But to finally see in the modern day, in my you know, adult years, to be able to see two of the best go at it and be on the court with them, man, it was just high-level basketball at its finest, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the Bird Magic thing, it never ended up being really Bird Magic, but it was something that you always thought there was a possibility of it. You know what I mean?
I say Bird Magic, I mean two of the best players going at it.
Because
it definitely wasn't a rivalry.
Back then, but even back then, like when KD was coming up and LeBron was already probably the best in the league at the time, like there was this thought in my mind even back then, and I was working in the league back then where I was like, This could be the Bird magic of our generation. It could be.
It could have been.
Yeah. But obviously, yes, things changed.
But obviously, things definitely changed.
All right. Real quick, Norris, before we move on, I got to give a shout out to one of our favorite sponsors, and that's the people over at eBay. Whether it's rare, dead stock, or the latest release, find the exact shoe you're looking for at eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it also protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 or more, making it free to sell or flip your collection. So go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. All right. So the next two things that I want to go through are, outside of winning 27 games in a row, which will go down in league history as one of the most impressive things that's ever happened. And then on top of going on to win a championship, right? And win your second championship in a row and go down as a historic franchise. These next two events for Heat fans, they will go down in Heat history. And arguably some Heat fans may remember these way more than the fact that you won 27 games, which is crazy, but they might.
I'm 100% sure most people know about what we're talking about more than the win streak. I'm 100% sure of that.
It's unbelievable. So the 11th win was that Cavs win where D Wade scores 11 in the fourth. Mm-hmm. Then February 28th.
It couldn't have been March 28th. Yeah.
Sorry, February 28th. I put March on. February 28th, the Harlem Shake video comes out.
The Harlem Shake.
Yep. Whose idea was it? How did it come together? How did you pick your costume? Tell me everything.
First of all, let me tell you how risky that was and what we did. We had a game the next day against the Memphis Grizzlies, who back then was not no pushover.
Right.
And so, first of all, we was like, are we going to really do this? Because, like I said, our team, we were so in touch. We were in tune. We were in tune to social media. We were in tune to what was going on in hip-hop culture. We were in tune to everything. And so we were the trend of the NBA at the time, and the Harlem Shake was the trend of like
pop culture,
everything, pop culture. And so it was like, yo, we the biggest team in sports. If we do this video, one, it has to be epic. Two, it's going to be epic. But three, if we do this the day before a game and we don't win, we're going to get major backlash, and Pat Riley is going to come down here and destroy this locker room. So we was like, all right, we're going to do this, but we got to make sure we whoop these cats tomorrow. And we was like, all right, deal. We made a deal with each other, and we was like, we're going to do it. And we had full choreography, costumes. Yeah, like, you know, D-Wade was the fashion guy, so he brought in a bunch of costumes and stuff like that. And we talked about – the only thing that we really scripted was the intro part.
The Birdman thing?
And that wasn't even really scripted, because if you knew anything about the Harlem Shake, the first 5 seconds of the song, everything is real calm. And right. Then once the beat drops, you know, it goes haywire. So we just did our little normal pregame stretches, relaxing while Birdman do his thing. And then when the beat dropped, you know, we made history.
So wait, D-Wade brought in costumes?
And D-Wade is the fashion guru of the team. At least he thought he was. So, you know, he had a whole bunch of costumes, a whole bunch of clothes. Him and his stylist, man, they got clothes for every event. And so, yeah, they bought in.
So your NC Hammer, your costume was a D Wade thing, or was that a you thing?
I chose it. I picked it, but I mean, I don't have nothing like that laying around my crib, so I had to get it from somewhere.
But, like, you know,
I was NC Hammer. So, you know, MC Hammer was the hip hop, you know, the hip hop guru. So I was NC Hammer with the flat top. And, you know, you saw what D-Wade had on, the red, the velvet suit and all
with the dancing bear head on his head. And he had Yeah, CB with the cowboy hat and the big boombox and the robe. Wait, I just the D-Wade part fascinates me because like Mario Chalmers is wearing a Mario costume.
Super Mario, man.
D-Wade had a Mario costume.
I mean, I'm sure some guys had a little bit of stuff, but I mean, nobody's walking around a house, you know, with horse helmets and bear heads and stuff like that, unless you're really into fashion and really into like, you know, that type of thing, which, like I said, D-Wade was heavily into fashion and heavily into events and stuff like that. And so anybody that needed a costume, go to D-Wade.
And then you got UD with the fireman's helmet and the WWE championship belt. I mean, you got James Jones wearing the clown hair. Rashard got the mime
Jabberwocky mask.
Yep,
on.
Yep. And then Ray wearing the Lucha Libre. He's wearing the wrestler's mask. I mean, it's just so unbelievable.
Hey, bro, it was epic, man.
And this is why I asked about the choreography, because if you go back, and for people who I'm sure you've watched it recently, I'm sure other Heat, I mean, I'm sure Heat fans have, it has, I'm looking right now, the Miami Heat Harlem Shake Chris Bosh edition. I don't know. It's from his YouTube page, has 1.8 million views.
And that's just on his, imagine the original one.
Oh yeah. 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 You are like in prime placement in this video. Like you're right. Like LeBron's obviously right there in the middle, King James. And then over his right shoulder is Rio, and over his left shoulder is NC Hammer. And then Bosch is off to the side, and D Wade in the bear costume a little further back. But the two of you are just like flanking LeBron, like right there in prime position. That's why I asked about the choreography.
Nah, that part was just organic. That, once the beat dropped and we was just like, let's go ham. Let's just do our thing.
Yeah. I can tell you other than Bird. Birdman did his intro and then he just stood in the back with whatever he was holding up in the air.
That was so subtle though. We need that. Whenever you have stuff going on, you need the subtle things in the back. Cause it was another part of Shane Battier was back there with his space cadet costume on. And so if you really watch the whole video in its entirety, man, it was a lot of things, a lot of moving parts going on at once, bro.
It's just so remarkable to me. And again, like the dunk contests and the team outings, and then this, like the ability for a team with so much pressure on their back to not take themselves too seriously, not get caught up in the moment, and still be able to like produce a moment that, It's not just an NBA moment. It's a pop culture moment. Like everything before this, I think you guys, I got to think, at least you were the first team or athletes that blew up. I mean, I think a lot of other teams and sports people started doing it, but this was the one that was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, man, we truly were the Heatles, bro. Yeah. In every sense of the word, we was the best show on the court with the way we played. You know, alley-oops and all of that, dunk contest, layup lines. But then off the court, you know, we Harlem Shake video. We had the Trayvon Martin, you know, wearing our hoodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we were socially conscious group, bro. And we believe that we had to enjoy the ride because, you know, we know that we don't get this time back. And the only thing we were going to be able to have was our memories. So we wanted to make sure the memories were not just about work, but about some fun too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned like what Pat would do, right? If you guys didn't win that next game, and I can't help but thinking this is 2013. Twitter's around, but it's still growing. And the 24-hour news cycle is still growing. Like it was still a thing, but not the way it's turned into this monster that it is today. Like if you guys did that today and lost, oh my God. Like I can't even imagine Stephen A. Smith the next day.
Oh man, we would never hear the end of it.
especially LeBron.
Oh man, they would have crucified him. But the good thing is, we don't have to worry about that because we took care of business.
Absolutely,
we had each other's back. That's another thing about that team. We always supported each other and had each other's back, man.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable. So you guys come back, obviously beat Memphis, win, mm-hmm. win, keep winning. The 23rd win of the streak is against the Celtics, and there was talk during that time that they might snap the streak. They had snapped Houston's 22-game streak by a couple years before that. They were up 17, another one of these games. They were up 17 at one point. They had a 13-point lead in the second half. You come back, you get the win. But in this game, in the second quarter, Norris, with 5 minutes and 30 seconds left, I would argue the greatest turnover of your career and maybe the greatest assist of your career because of it. With 5:30 left, it looked like you guys were running like an elbow set, and Jason Terry, I believe, is the one who steals the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then D-Wade gets the steal, gives it up to Rio, who gives it up to you. And I'll just say, I'm going to give a shout out to my guy, Jonathan Zaslow, who does radio for the Heat. I asked him, we were talking about it yesterday, and his question was, did you think you were going to get charged with accessory to murder after throwing the lob to LeBron and he dunked on Jason Terry? Because that is, maybe D Wade's dunk over Anderson Varejao where he knocked him into the basket. I would say, I don't think that's better than that. This has got to be the best dunk in franchise history.
This was one of the most savage
dunks in NBA history. You threw the assist.
No doubt. Let me tell you though, as nice as that dunk was at the time, we didn't think it would be like how it is now though. It was just one of many alley-oop dunks, you know, that we did. Like I threw LeBron a bunch of nice, you know, sports center quality alley-oops, but this one, obviously Jason Terry used to talk a lot of trash back in the day. You know, he used to talk a lot of trash. And so, you know, LeBron, that was a chance for LeBron to be able to baptize him and get some get back. But like, if you notice the play, when the play happened, the bench went crazy, but you know, me, LeBron and Rio and D-Wade, we didn't like jump up and go crazy. It was just like another play.
I noticed that like LeBron, LeBron kind of looks at him because obviously he just dunked on, but you just kind of looked at LeBron like it was just another play.
Yeah, because that was, bro. I mean, I had thrown LeBron so many lobs, bro. It was just like another play, but the social media part of it, when they kept showing it, 1 year anniversary, then 2 year anniversary, then 3 year, I'm like, bro, that dunk was that crazy? And so I'm like, man, like this dunk is like, out of all the dunks, you know how many dunks LeBron had that season? How many alley-oops we threw that season, bro? It was many. And so for that one to be the most memorable one, bro, it's special. And I'm glad I didn't take that layup. Out of all the layups that I didn't shot, good shot, I'm glad I didn't take that layup. Nobody would have remembered that play if I would have got the layup.
Obviously that you may have had more important assists, but like just in terms of a highlight, that's got to be the best assist of your career.
It's the most memorable to everybody else. For me, I don't think it's the best one, but
interesting. I mean, I just mean in terms of like a highlight,
For shock value, yeah. For shock value, that one was definitely nasty because he really dunked him into the ground, bro.
Yeah, and I think look, part of it, I'm sure, and then Heat Nation, Heat fans remember it so fondly because they take pride in it. Also, it was the Celtics. It was Jason Terry. It was during the win streak. Like all these things, there was all these things that it was such a buildup, and then he did that.
I almost wonder what he was doing when he jumped. Like I think it was the instinct. I think he probably jumped and was like, "Oh man, I probably didn't even mean to jump," because he had no shot at blocking that. I mean, LeBron was running. He was running full speed. He took off. Like, you know, he got that iconic leg, one leg takeoff. Mm-hmm. Man, he took off. I threw it to where only he could catch it. And for Jason Terry, yeah, it was history, bro. For him to even think about jumping, it was like, it made it even worse for him. It would have been better if he just would have turned and got out the way.
Well, that's what most, yeah, when most of the time when LeBron's coming down like that, that's what most people do. It had to be, yeah, I think you're right. It had to be instinct of just, he saw you make the pass. He didn't know who was coming. He just saw the pass go up and he turned around. And was like, oh, I guess this is what I got to do.
I set him up for the failure.
Hey, and you know what? Heat Nation is always going to love it, love you for it, because it's one of the all-time great highlights in the history. I mean, it's got.
I wish when they show it on SportsCenter and they put it on Instagram, I wish they give your boy some credit. You know, they always talk about LeBron jumped on Jason Terry. I'm like, man, it was an alley-oop pass. Give your boy some credit sometime.
Yeah, well, hey, look, I'll tell you what. Heat Nation remembers because
no doubt.
Of Heat Nation, they might remember it as LeBron, but I'm telling you, like my guy Zaslo, when I hit him up, I said, what do you want me to ask Norris? And he said, he knew that you threw the pass. And he said, did you think you were going to get charges with accessory to murder because you threw the pass? So,
and that's what most people say too. When people message me about that play, they'd be like, bro, accessory. Or they'd be like, they'd say something like, the setup man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Then people look, it is one of those moments that is always going to live in Heat history. It's for this generation of Heat fans because
NBA history, bro. It'd be on, it's on the ESPN app every time it's the anniversary, bro.
Yeah.
Every time on the ESPN app, the Sports Center app, the Bleacher Report app, any sports outlet app has that on there, bro.
Yeah. Crazy. Unbelievable. It's awesome that you threw that pass. It's awesome that you were, it's crazy.
I'm glad I could throw it because, you know, that turnover, it makes up for the turnover.
I know. I feel bad. But
yeah, nobody even knows that was a turnover, bro. What you doing?
No, they know. D Wade got the steal and it was a fast break. But I'm saying for you, it actually is a silver lining because I'm sure, I don't know how many turnovers you had in your career, but it turns out to be the best turnover you ever had because it became one of the greatest highlights in NBA history. You know, turning a negative into a positive, right? You always want me to be glass half full on here, right? That's what you're asking for.
Be positive, Joy.
I am being positive,
my guy.
Hey, look, best turnover you ever had. Heat Nation will look, most people won't remember that and they won't even remember. They don't care. It was worth it. It was worth it. You know what? You planned it. You planned that turnover.
Never that. But if there ever was going to be a way to turn it over, it was going to be like that.
100%. So that was that game was the 23rd game. End up beating the Celtics. Then four more. We already talked about, it didn't really sink in, until after the loss. Was there any other moments, particularly from that streak, like games or moments that stuck out to you that we didn't necessarily hit?
I mean, you had the LeBron step back three to win the game in Golden State. It was so many memories you could talk about, but all of them, the Cavalier game really stood out to me, being back in Cleveland, being down by 27 points at one point in the second half and coming back and winning that game stood out to me. The best part wasn't just one moment. It was just a combination of moments of being able to have that type of focus and that type of drive, man. You have to be a highly competitive person to be able to win 27 straight games without no slip-ups. You had to be incredibly, incredibly focused and incredibly, incredibly competitive. And our team was made up of alpha males. We were made up of highly, highly, highly competitive individuals. And I believe that's one of the reasons why we were able to do what we did. And the cool part about it was we shared a moment together after we finally lost. That was the only time we talked about it. And that was the last time we talked about it. Until after the season when we won the championship. Because after that last loss, we said, fellas, we took a moment, literally like a moment of silence. We talked about what we just accomplished and how special it was. And then after that, we said, all right, now let's go out here and win a championship. And we never talked about the streak again until after the season was over and we had won the championship.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And obviously, like, I'll end with this, because we'll obviously, we're going to do more episodes like this, because I think I love this. This is awesome. This is great. I mean, great, like, just listening and hearing about it, but also I'm sure, you know, I know Heat Nation loves these kind of stories and hearing about the history of the Heat. So we'll obviously talk about that. You know, we'll talk about the finals down the line and the playoffs and big moments. But, you know, when you look back at this run, 27 in a row, 66 wins, I kind of feel like this season in particular, with the difficulty of coming off of a championship, winning 66 games, having a 27 game win streak, which is in the modern era, you know, unheard of, and then going on to win a championship, I don't know that this single season gets talked about enough as potentially one of the best in NBA history. I know it gets talked about, but I still I think it so quickly gets passed over by what the Bulls did and what the Warriors did, even though the Warriors lost when they went 73-9 or whatever, like they didn't win the finals.
On another podcast that I hosted during the pandemic, and I had D Wade on as a guest. We talked about that because it was a list that came out, the top teams or dynasties of the 2000s, and our team wasn't on there. I was like, that is crazy how you can put any of these teams on there and not have our team on there. When our team won, you know, we won two out of what, we went to four straight finals, won two of them. Then our cultural significance, you know, we were definitely the most popular team. We did trendy thing. We had trendsetters and everything with fashion, with the Harlem Shake, with the Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. You know, we had LeBron won MVPs. You know, we had three Olympians on our team. Like, I'm like, how could we
four first ballot Hall of Famers?
Four first ballot Hall of Famers. Like, yeah, it was crazy. So I put our team up against anybody. I believe we have a chance against anybody, you know.
And I think in particular this run, like this season.
Yeah, this particular season we're talking about, I will put this team up to compete against anybody.
Yeah.
You know, not saying that we would guarantee win against everybody, but I like our chances against anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and this will be a good place to end it, and because we'll discuss it more down the line. I think for some reason, when they talk about teams going 4-3, 4-3 in the conference finals and the finals going seven games in both of those,
mm-hmm.
people hold that against you guys.
Hey man, it was a highly competitive league at the time. The Eastern Conference was not the Eastern Conference wasn't the weaker conference at the time. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. You know, we had Chicago Bulls, the Boston Celtics, the Indiana Pacers. You know, they were tough teams, you know.
Absolutely. No question. But
so yeah,
that's a story for another story for another day. That's a story for another day. Now, we stay positive. The anniversary of the 27, one of the greatest win streaks in NBA history, Norris. This was unbelievably fun. And I think we gotta do some more of these. We gotta do another one pretty soon.
For sure, man. We gotta talk about those memorable moments on those championship teams. But today we want to uplift the people. We want to give them a reminder that even though it's a lot of stress going on with the deadline and, you know, losing streaks or whatever, we want to give the Heat Nation, in the words of Shane Battier, a good social touch.
A good social touch.
Memory.
Yep. Well, everybody, appreciate you guys listening to Believe in Miami Heat, presented by betonline.ag. Remember, subscribe, rate, and review. If you like this episode, which I know you did, because how could you not? Let us know and give us more ideas. Like, what do you want us to talk about? We want to hear what you guys want to talk about. So let us know in the comments. You could tweet at me at Joseph R. Levin on Twitter. And we'll be back next week with our normal, you know, post deadline. We'll see what happens with the Heat, but we'll be back next week. And until then, Norris, why don't you go ahead and take the people out?
Heat Nation, another episode. Talking about all things Heat basketball. Make sure you join us again next week. And remember, 27 straight today, the anniversary. 66-16, our record. One of the best iconic moments, the Harlem Shake. The 2012-2013 Miami Heat season. One of the best seasons ever, one of the best teams ever. If you want to argue about it, there's no argument. Have a good day.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.